we approach the subject and we broach the subject, it's very, very exciting. Part of the excitement is that this was a discovery in our lifetime. This is not something that was discovered 500 years ago, 700 years of the Torah, 3,200 years ago. This was mamash in our lifetime, in every one of our lifetimes, that it was rediscovered. And we're going to go through the topic from beginning to end. I tried to be as honest in my decision-making as possible, and I'm going to give to you as many of the sources that I can that are honest, as well as my understanding of what is real and what is not real. Meaning, there are some sources, as we will see, that are indeed an attack against Chelas, and some sources that are used as an attack, but they're not really. And we have to be thinking people, we have to understand what yeah, what no. And at the end we'll understand, is it a good idea to wear it? Nah. We'll get to that. But it's a very, very exciting thing. Even those people that don't wear it should understand it's an exciting thing. Because the chances of it being real, according to almost all people, it's pretty... Most people, if you ask them, if you don't have to wear it, do you still think this is the best chance that this is it? I think most Rabbanim, those that don't wear it, will all admit this is probably it. And that's a real source of excitement. The excitement stems from the Radzina Rebbe, who in the 1800s decided to take a Yerushalmi very seriously, that Tchelis is going to be rediscovered in the time of Yemos HaMashiach. And he felt, well, someone's going to have to do something about that. I want to bring Mashiach. And he went and set out to discover a little bit marine biology. He studied, and he set out to discover where is it hiding. And he published 3 svarim on the topic, and he came up with none other than the squid. The squid shoots out this black dye, and he was so excited, he found Tchelet. How's that Tchelet? Works like this. Everyone here knows a little bit of computer graphics. If you take the color of any color to its deepest complexion, its darkest light, you'll end up with black, or what seems to appear as black. Green in its darkest shade looks like black. Red, the same. Blue, all of them. So what he figured was, you know, it looks black, this dye that the squid squirts out, but maybe it's not. If there would be a way to lighten it up a little bit and see what its true color is, we'll be able to see. And if it's blue, that is just going to be super exciting. And that's what he did. He asked some chemists, how do I lighten it up to see what its true color is? And they gave him a whole list of chemicals. They added it, and it turned blue. The excitement spread throughout only the Radziner world, basically. Breslov, in the end, bought into the Radziner world. And you have these two camps, Radziner Hasidim and Breslov Hasidim, wearing the Radziner Rebbe Tchelis. To the extent that if you go to a store in Mea Shearim and ask for Tchelis, and they sell it to you for about 30, 40, or up to 50, 60 shkalim, they will be selling you the Radziner Rebbe Tchelis. Squid. Now each squid, I don't know if any of you have seen a picture of a live squid, but it's not small. I mean, babies, I guess, are small. But we're talking about something larger than whales. Like 2-3 times the length of a whale, of a giant whale. I mean, they are really big creatures. And he found one, and they tested on it. And they wouldn't be lying to you if they gave you that pair, because that's the only pair they know. They're probably Radziner Hasidim or Breslov Hasidim, and that's all they know, so they gave that pair. However, someone named Rav Herzog did his doctoral thesis. He was one of the Rabbi Rashiyas of Yerushalayim, and he pointed out the following in his research. If you take tuna fish, tuna blood, human blood, cow blood, and stick it into these chemicals, you know what happens? Turn blue. All the chemicals that they added were white or clear. It just turns out that there was a reaction that had nothing at all to do with the squid blood. any organic blood will make this chemical compound turn blue. And that is a pretty serious problem when he realized that it's not true. And when he came up with an idea of what the most likely candidate is, that it's going to be the Murex trunculus snail, it's very hard for people to now believe the real Tchelus, because, hey, the Radin Rebbe thought he had the real Tchelus, and he was proven wrong 100 years later. Just wait another 100 years, and this will be disproven. And that's what Rav Eliashiv writes. He can't suggest to anyone to wear this, because no matter what proof you have, there still might be a chance that it's not it. It disappeared. Why did it disappear? Before we continue and get into the sources. The exile. It also became a prohibition with punishment of death. The death penalty given to any Jew found dying anything. The entire dying industry was destroyed. If, let's say, the people that behold the secret recipe to Coca-Cola end up with a death penalty if they produce Coca-Cola, what's going to happen? It's going to be lost. If you wait about 1,000 years, it will be lost. It's as simple as that. Right? But come on, their kids will have it. This was the family heritage for one Shevet only, for Shevet Zvulun. Zvulun was given the secret recipe, and that's it. And it became the death penalty. If they produce it, it's gone. The Muslims, I believe. Here. The history, by the way, at the end of this year, if you want a history timeline, so that's these charts, you can take a look, and that'll be at the end. The Muslim conquest. They wanted to hold it themselves, the dying industry. It was a major, major industry. Okay, let's go to the sources. Are we allowed to rediscover Tchelet? The Sifri says in Parshas Vezos Bracha, Amar Rabbi Yossi, Pamachas Ayisi Mahalech Mekziv LaTzur. Once I was walking from Kziv to Tzur. Tzur is Phoenicia. Kziv is somewhere near Haifa. And I was walking from Kziv to Tzur. And I found this elderly man and I asked him, and there was a whole long conversation between them about other things. And in the meantime, I asked him, so, what is your work, your line of work? He answered me, Mechilazon. I get my money from Chilazon. So he gets it from snails. He is in the dying industry. Amarti lo, I said to him, Umi matsui. Really? Is this found? People still are in that industry? By the way, this is the Sifri. When was the Sifri written? In the 700s, about 750. It's a story about Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi lived way before the year 750. He was amongst the Tanaim. But it's recorded already then. Amar Le, he said to him, Amarti Lo, I'm sorry. Amar Le, lost concentration there. Amar Le, he said to me, Hashamayim, my gosh, what do you mean? You're asking me, is it still around? Makom Bayam, he starts telling him exactly where it is. It's a place in the sea, Shemutal Baharid, that's amongst the mountains. Where do you have a place in the sea amongst the mountains? Valley. There are valleys in the ocean or in the sea. In a volcano, okay. An undersea volcano. Any other possibilities? What are the mountains that are in the sea? What? By Herzliya. What do you mean?
It's like a cliff.
Oh, so if there are cliffs and mountains and in the sea, very often the water covers over these cliffs. It's also very possible it could be coral. There are these coral reefs. It's very possible it could be the coral. We'll see. The samamiyot, and we'll continue later on about the samamiyot, these lizards, or perhaps something else, the chulei, etc. We'll get back to that. Rabbi Yossi responded, Nikar hu, it's very clear, sheganuz la tzadikim la tid lavo, that this is hidden for the tzadikim in the future. What is clear? What is hidden for the tzaddikim in the future? Can't be tchelus, because it was around. He was talking to a man who manufactured tchelus.
place?
The place, but the man knew where it was. So it wasn't him. The mitzvah, but it was worn.
Can you say it again?
What?
How do you do it?
Say what again? His response is nikar hu. It's recognized. It's clear. Sheganuz la tzadikim la tid lavo. That it's hidden for the tzadikim for the future. The recipe. It's definitely a possibility. Another possibility is it's a lot of people, a lot of rabbanim use this source, this sifri, to paskin a halacha. An agadic sifri is used to paskin a halacha that it's usher to wear it until the atid lava. And this is really hard to believe. There's no chance, for both sides, that that's what it means. There's no halacha that's going to come from this sifri that's going to overturn the din d'oraisa. The reason you should wear tcheles is because the Torah says you have to wear tcheles. Just like you have to put tefillin on, you have to keep Shabbos, the Torah says you have to wear tcheles on your tzitzis. If you have a four-cornered garment, and we all wear four-cornered garments today, you must put on white strings and blue strings. It's a din d'oraisa. No sifri can come along with this agadic interpretation, which most people don't even understand what the pshat is, and use this as a source to say it's usur to wear tcheles from here, unless you're a tzaddik in Olam Haba. It's really a hard, pressed, far-fetched explanation, I believe. It's possible. There are a few possibilities of what this means. One possibility that I'm fond of is that it is referring to the essence of the mean and meaning of this. Everything in life has meaning. Why is the sky blue? Why is everything the way it is? And why in the world would a snail or an animal that's found in the sea, on the mountains, what's the pshat of each aspect of this mitzvah of tcheles? That's what's ganuz l'tzadikim l'atid lavo. It's just hidden from us. He, Rabbi Yossi, has no longer a clue as to the understanding. Where is it? And he starts telling him where it is. And he's like, man, it's so complex. The understanding of this is what's hidden. What? If that's what the word chok would mean, yes. But no. It means that he didn't understand it. He didn't understand it. He lost it. He was one of the last, Tanoim. He didn't know. Okay. V'zeh perusho. This is going to be important for later. V'zeh perusho k'shel ki shefa yamim minaku sfunei tmunei chol. Within the bracha of Shevet Zvulun, in the end of Torah. Shefa yamim yinaku sfunei, the treasures, tmunei, that are hidden, chol in the sand. The hidden treasures in the sand. What's a hidden treasure in the sand? The Medrash is claiming the chila zon. The snail that's going to be used for something. By the way, this Medrash does not say that this is a chilazon used for tchela. This chilazon may have been used for something else. It could have been used for argaman. It could have been used for any other dye. It turns out that there were all sorts of chilazonot, as we'll see, used for dyeing. Any of them. It could have been a story about just any chilazon. He was in the dyeing industry. Really? You're in the dye. Where do you find them?
How do you know that going to the chilazon?
It says, "Hu amar li mechilazon." I get my work from. I'm sorry, I cut off an important phrase before that, which was "Bamet parnasavcha." What's your line of work? And he answered, "Hu amar li mechilazon from the chizlazon." Amar tilo, I said to him, "Umi matzui." Where do you find such a thing? Amar li, he said to me, "Hashamayim." What are you talking about? Makom bayam shemutal baharim. And he starts telling him exactly where you find it. Okay. Next, so where does it come from, this alleged thing that makes tchelet? So it says in the Tosefta and Menachos, Perek Tes Halach Avav, tchelet ein k'sheira ala min achilazon, hevi shalom min achilazon, psulam. If you brought the blue dye somehow, you extract the blue dye from anything other than the chilazon, it's finished, it's not going to work. It's possible. Good? So it's got to come from chilazon. What is chilazon, by the way? So we don't know, right? That's a whole riddle here. But do you think it's one very specific creature, or perhaps a family of creatures, a species? What are the chances that you have a word, chilazon, that refers to only one? For example, if let's say we were talking about a dog, what's the word for dog in Hebrew? A kelev. When you would find the word kelev in Torah, what are the chances, or in Chazal for that matter, what are the chances it hones in on one and only one dog?
Right. I would assume it would, because otherwise it would say an idea of a dog. It wouldn't say, like, if it says kelev.
But the word kelev actually refers to all dogs. Hound dogs, hound dogs, every kind. Hot dogs, all dogs. Every kind of dog is referred to by kelev. Chilazon would be the same. And that's going to be relevant later. The Rambam says, where do you find this? Very simple. B'yam HaMelech u'matzui. It's found in the Yam HaMelech. So today someone told me the reason why he doesn't wear tchelet is because it's not found in the Yam HaMelech. Nothing living lives in the Yam HaMelech. Nothing living ever lived in the Yam HaMelech. What in the Rambam, in the world is the Rambam talking about? The Rambam says in Perish HaMishnayos, in Maseches Kelim, whenever I use the phrase Yam HaMelech, I mean the Mediterranean Sea, the Yam HaGadol. Why is it that he continues to call it the Yam HaMelech? I don't know. Ask him. I'm not his defense attorney, but the Rambam HaKadosh calls, he says it, Beferish and Perish HaMishnayos, the Yam HaMelech, when I use that phrase, is Yam HaGadol. So this guy is not going to wear tchelet because he doesn't know the Perish HaMishnayos. Okay. Good. Next, the Gemara, there was a question? Next is the Gemara in Shabbos, which by the way would obviously contradict the Rambam and leave the Rambam without a source, and that is the Tzayadei Chalazon Misulamot Shal Tzur Bar Chaifa. It was on the beaches, the Tzayadei Chilazon, those that trapped Chilazon did it on the beaches from Haifa to Phoenicia. Where's Haifa? On the port, on the coast. Where's Phoenicia? On the coast of the Mediterranean Sea, not on the Yam HaMelech. So either the Rambam has no source, or the Rambam actually meant this. Who would you go with? The Gemara, which actually had tchelet in their time, or the Rambam, who did not have tchelet in his time? I think the answer is pretty obvious. You would go with the Gemara. Seems to have been on the beaches, and I don't think even the Rambam disagrees. Does it move? Is it a plant? Is it a fish? Is it what is it? Hold on, off on questions. Remind me of questions in about 5 minutes. I just want to finish through all the criteria. Well, the Gemara in Shabbos says it's a machlokus about sad. Are you chayev on one? I didn't have time to go cut and paste the whole piece. You're chayev for trapping this animal, according to the Gemara Bavli. And then there's a question if it's dush. And we'll see what that's supposed to mean. The case is that you trap the chilazon, and you get it, you trap it, and then you break it open, you crack it open. Potseya is like with a hammer. Where do you find potseya? In Maseches Shabbos, potseya saigozin. You crack open. You take a hammer and you smash it. So it's going to have to be some kind of object, animal, that you have to smash open. Potseya. And the question is potseya smashing open, is that dush or is it not dush? Dush is where you extract something from inside. Good? So there's some kind of liquid dye somewhere, maybe the blood, and we have to know, for some reason, this is a question, that if I take a lemon and I squeeze it, that's dush. So is cracking the shell considered dush? Question, we'll see. But trapping, that definitely, you have to trap this animal. The Gemara Yerushalmi says, Tosfos brings it down on that amud, that there's no such thing as trapping the chilazon. There's the din of trapping on Shabbos is if you actually have to go. It's a moving creature, even a fast-moving creature, where you actually have to go and trap it. If it's just sitting there, waiting for you to take it, that's not called trapping. If it's a snail, for example, snail just sits there. You just pick it up. It's not going anywhere. That's not called trapping. In the Gemara Yerushalmi Paskins, it's not trapping. It's a trap, the chila zone. So why is it that there's this machlokas between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi if it's called trapping or not? We'll get back to that. The Perush HaMiuchas L'Raivet al Sefer HaYetzirah. The Perush that's attributed to the Raivet, one of the commentaries and the colleague of the Rambam, writing on the Sefer of Creation, Kinei achilazon, the achilazon, e efshar la amodalav. It's impossible to put your finger on it. Imhu mechlala dagim or mechlala tzomea. Is it a plant or is it a fish? I have no clue. What is it? Ki hu chai, it's alive. Umitnoa and moves. Eino machlith mekomo, but it doesn't move from its place. Like it sways, nia, na v'nud. It sways, but it doesn't move. Ki hu no aids. Vitakua bar, it's because it digs itself in the ground. And it's stuck in the ground. So what is it? Well, some kind of creature that is stuck in one place. Now we can understand why the Yerushalmi would say it's not tzav. It's not trapping. We don't yet understand why the Gemara Bavli says that it is tzav. We turn the page. What does it look like? And this is where we start to give away all the answers. Dvarim Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah says there was a miracle that happened in the desert that the clothes of the people for 40 years did not wear away. Incredible, right? We buy clothes every half a year, every year. And somehow for 40 years in the desert, the clothes did not wear away. So the Medrash says, fine, it didn't wear away. But what did they do when they outgrew it? You know, there were kids born and they grew up. So that there were no clothing shops. Right? Abercrombie and Fitch wasn't around in the desert. So what did they do? Malo bolus amalsechem al raglechem. What does it really mean that it didn't get worn away? V'chulei amar lei. So the other Tana said, I'll tell you what it means. V'lo ayu g'deilin, v'hayu ha-begodim ketanim lahen. I'm sorry, it's Akasha. Amar lei, v'lo ayu g'deilin, v'hayu ha-begodim ketanim lahen. Didn't they grow? And then the clothes would be too small then? So amar lei said to him, don't be so blown away by that. That's not such a blowaway kasha. Hachilazon hazeh kishagadal malbusho gadalima. The chilazon does the same thing. As it grows, the clothing grows with it. So now we have to find a creature. Apparently it's an animal. It stays still, doesn't move much, and it has some kind of clothing that grows with it. There are two creatures that have clothing that grow with it. They are? Turtle and snails. That is it. Oysters are not. Lobsters, I don't think they have a shell. All other creatures. There's no other creature that is quite like it. Turtles, so is there any record amongst the ancients that they took turtles and used them for dying? Maybe for killing, but not dying. None. None at all. There are no dyes that come from turtles. Okay, so let's see. Also, the Gemara Shabbos HaPotzea we discussed. What does the word chilazon mean? Well, in Hebrew, modern Hebrew, if you open up a dictionary for the past 50 years, way before Til Tchelet opened up an organization that they discovered what the chilazon is, the word chilazon for the past about 100 years has meant a snail. So certainly, it's worthwhile checking out that maybe it's a snail, right? But I understand language changes, and it could be it's not. It could be it has nothing to do with snails. It's certainly worthwhile checking it out. Turns out, snails, millions and millions of snail shells were found in dyeing vats and manufacturing and factories along the coast from Haifa all the way up to Phoenicia. Hundreds and hundreds of productions were going on. Literally millions of snails were found. Millions of snail remnants. So now, wait a minute, they were clearly used for dyeing. Which snails? There were three. three types: Murex trunculus, Murex brandis, and then there's this other one I just cannot pronounce. Tyus had something. We need a table of contents to figure out how to pronounce it. So it turns out two of those three produce a very nice red, and one of those three produces a purplish blue. What are the chances? Aristotle, Pliny, many others, this world historians write about the Jews who used to produce dyes. And where did they produce the purpura dye from? The purpura, which we'll define in a moment, came from none other than the Murex trunculus. It's in the history books, all of them. Everyone knew about the Jews that made dyes from the color purpura from the Murex trunculus. Ready for this? What does the word chilazon mean in the time of Chazal? Maybe it's changed. Well, let's see. Gemara Sanhedrin, Sadi Aleph Amid Aleph. See, there was a story there about a guy that goes to a mountaintop and he sees, he was looking around, just down. He wasn't looking specifically for a chilazon. Turns out he said, he remarks how he saw a chilazon. But then that night it rained and millions, hundreds, I don't know what, just lots and lots and lots of chilazonot came out. What comes out after the rain? Slugs. Which family is the slug family in? Mollusk. What's a snail family? The mollusk family. It's very possible the mollusk family is the word chilazon. Any type of snail. Those with shells, those without shells. Targum Yonatan, Yeresh HaTzlatzal in Parshas Kisavo, about how the crop will get destroyed in the curse. If you don't keep the Torah and mitzvos, then Hashem's going to wipe out your crop. Yeresh HaTzlatzal. What's the tzlatzal that's going to eat up your crop? Perish Chilzo. Excuse me, the Chilzona. The Chilzona is going to come and eat up and destroy your crop. There are indeed mollusks that eat crops. It's very possible there are other animals as well. So that one's not a good raya. But Rashi comes along in the Gemara Avodah Zarah, Chav Ches Amud Beis, and points out that Yeresh HaTzlatzal is the limus. The chilazon is the limus. I'm sorry, on the word chilazon is the limus in French. Anyone know French? I don't. But I asked some people that do, and they said, limes, I don't know how to pronounce it, lamads, I don't know how to pronounce it, is a snail. So here we have a whole slew of commentaries, and the word chilazon in modern Hebrew and in ancient Hebrew seems to have been snail. Good possibility. The Rav Yah says, in the name of the Yerushalmi, it says in the Gemara Brachos, that you have to read Shema, Bein Tchelet LeKarti, at the point, according to one opinion, when you could tell the difference between Tchelet and Karti. What is that? Perusho, the Yerushalmi says, let me explain to you what those are. Bein Purpirin, Ubein Pripinin. Tchelet is Purpinin. Purpirin. Purpirin, if you go to Greece, is any color that comes from the Murex trunculus. Any color that comes from the Murex trunculus today in Greece is purpurin. A lot of people say that it's impossible that it could be the Murex trunculus. Why? Because all the history books only talk about purpura, which is really purple, and it's not blue. And there's not a single history book that tells us that there was blue, that the Jews died. So it turns out, it's not true. First of all, we have a number of proofs, archaeological proofs, that the Jews made blue in those times. And they dyed the color blue. However, there's no proof in the history books. Why is that? Because the word purpura, if you go to Greece, is both purple and blue. You know how, like, in America, we have dark blue and light blue? Well, sometimes you have different shades. And it's very possible that purpura could be that purple came from purpura. And everyone decided, well, since today the word purple clearly came from purpura, therefore there's no record of the Jews ever dyeing blue. But it's not true because it never said purple. It said purpura. And that seems to actually have included both blue and purple. Chelet ve'argaman. There's actually, I spoke to a guy that worked on grammar in this field with dyed colors in the ancients. And he gave me a number of proofs. I didn't have time to write them down. Where you have chelet and argaman being called purpura. Both of them clearly being referred to that way. So there's no such proof as being a problem. Okay? It seems to be, if we go through all the sources so far of what we've had, it seems pretty clear it's in those vats, the dyeing industry, it is a snail, and there's proof that it was gotten from there. Its shell grows with it. Sounds very good. We're now going to take it to a whole new level, and Mamish prove it, what I think is beyond the shadow of a doubt. Yeah.
First of all, the original rabbi who you started with, who
the Radina rabbi.
Right. If my questions are, if there are all these sources that
seem to we'll get to it. Excellent question. What is he going to do with all these sources?
Right. And also, how come no one else before now that this is kind of a recent discovery? How come no one else took these sources and said, hey, it's a snail?
Okay, we'll get to that too. Excellent, excellent questions. I don't know if I'll actually get back to the Radzina Rebbe enough to answer all each source for the Radzina Rebbe, but I'm going to bring some justification to the Radzina Tcheles, and if you're interested, there is a fan of Radzina Tcheles that put out a website called Fact and Fiction on Real Tchela. And it's anti-Murex Trunculus, pro the sepia, which is a cuttlefish, which is the scientific term.
I didn't understand why there's a contradiction between
Rambam
and the
Gemara. No, I said it doesn't have to be a contradiction because the Rambam himself in Perashat Mishnayos Kelim points out that Yama Melech refers to the Yama Gadol.
Right, but why do people say there's a question? I don't understand why. One says the beach, one says the water, is that the issue?
No, one says the Yama Melech, one says the Yama Gadol. Two different seas. The sea, the right, Dead Sea. For the Mediterranean Sea.
That was the only question between the Gemara, Bavli, and the Rambam.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so I'm pointing out that in case the Rambam was consistent with what he held in Perashe Mishnayos, then it's very good. And in case he actually changed his mind and didn't use that idea that he wrote in Perashe Mishnayos, so then altogether you'd go with the Gemara over the Rambam anyway. The Rambam was writing it from a time that it existed, and the Rambam was writing from based on his understanding of the historians that he read in Aristotle.
And if water puts yourself onto the beach, so if you find on the beach, that's the water puts yourself onto the beach.
No, the Yama Melech is nowhere near the beach.
I'm saying.
Yama Melech is nowhere near the beach. Yama Melech is deep inside, it's all the way at the border, the other side of Israel. Okay. There are two types of testing if it's the real thing. We're going to get to that in a few moments. However, before we get to the two types of testing, it turns out, by the way, if we could get some air on from that machine, that would be great if anyone could find it. It turns out that the Gemara says, opens up with a brisa, there's no way to test real tchelet and fake tchelet. And the Gemara brings down a brisa that there's the fake stuff, which is called Kala Ilan. One is held at a tremendous liability by God if he produces Tchelet color from Kala Ilan. Why is that? Because no one could tell them apart except for God. So it turns out, if Herzog was doing his research, he found there are only a couple of possibilities. By the way, if in the Gemara Rav Achai brought Tchelet to Bavel, Rav Achai, one of the Amoron, brought Tchelet to Bavel. What does that mean? That Tchelet still existed in the time of the Gemara. How many years have transpired between now and then? maximum point in time where Tefillah has stopped is 1,500 years. We are not aware of any more than miraculous Kriyas Yam Suf miracle taking place where some creature seemingly totally disappeared, wiped out all historical artifacts and writings, something that was a major industry that all Jews wore. Somehow, no one has any recollection. It's not a snail. It's nothing that anyone in mankind knows anything about, and it's just totally, poof, disappeared. As a matter of fact, the oceanographers did research on the Mediterranean Sea. There seems to not have been any significant change in the zoology of the Mediterranean Sea in the past 2,000 years to have created such miraculous thing that something became extinct to an extent that no one even remembers that there was such a creature. It's really hard to believe. So unless you want to say that it's something that entirely disappeared and only comes around back, it hides under the sea in a way that no one knows, and when Mashiach's going to come, all of a sudden, poof. By the way, there's another attack on Tcheles today, a general attack, whichever Tcheles you wear, and that is Tcheles, in the name of the Arizal, it's actually in the name of Reb Chaim Vital, or the Arizal's top Talmud, from his Sefer I'll think of it in a minute. So in the name of Reb Chaim Vital, that Tcheles doesn't exist unless it's the time of Beis HaMikdash. You need the Beis HaMikdash in order to wear Tcheles. It's absolutely not true. First of all, I looked it up. Reb Chaim Vital doesn't say that. He says, B'tkufa misaviv lebeit HaMikdash. In a time which surrounds before and after. But it doesn't have to be only when the Beis HaMikdash is there. The proof is they were wearing Tcheles for a few hundred years after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. They were wearing it. And the Tanaim were wearing it. The Amoraim were wearing it. They were all wearing it. It only disappeared. The first time we find it disappeared is the Tanchuma in the 800s. The Tanchuma says, we, the Zman HaZeh, no longer have it. So somewhere between the 600s and 800s that it disappeared. Okay, not so long ago. And the Gemara says there's no difference. Only a Kadosh Baruch Hu could tell the difference between indigo, Kali Ilan, and the real Tcheles. What happened? So Rav Herzog pointed out it has to be one of these snails. It's got to be. And the most likely candidate is Murex trunculus. But it can't be. And he ended his life writing that it cannot be the Murex trunculus. Why not? Because the Murex trunculus is not steadfast. And one of the requirements is that it's steadfast. It's kavua, and the dye doesn't come out easily. And it came out like that. Two, it was purple. And we know it's supposed to be blue. There, by the way, they found in a shul by the Tanaim, a shul that had a picture of Aaron HaKohen with blue. So apparently the color, with Tcheles. Tcheles, color blue. Apparently, Tcheles is blue. Yeah.
Maybe light. Even saying that can't be kind of easy. Maybe saying that the process can't be easy. So we're saying that it comes out purple. The whole point is that there's supposed to be some difficult process to get the purple to turn blue.
Turns out that the Murex trunculus snail, they cracked it open. And some scientist in the 1980s discovered that you need ultraviolet rays in order to do something to the compound. What was the problem? They chemically analyzed the Murex trunculus. It was dibromoindigo. Two bromine atoms double bonded to indigo. What's Kali Ilan? Pure indigo. And you need somehow some sun. If you put the sun, the chemical stuff, into the sun at the right point in the formation of this dye, you know what happens? The sun destroys the double bond. The bromine dissipates entirely into the air. And what's left? Pure indigo. If you get indigo from a plant, the woad plant or the indigo plant, and if you get indigo from the Murex trunculus snail, no one could tell them apart, even scientists today, once you have the indigo. It's the exact same chemical structure. Nothing can tell them apart. Seems to be pretty good.
It's a little bit know, I wouldn't call it stretch, but it's a little bit different. There's like, we just learned in like Sukkah that the Torah says ways have to be pleasant and peaceful. And that's why you can't use something with like thorns, but it takes that time with thorns. And so bromine, when bromine's born into the air, it's toxic to people.
Is it?
Yeah. So
okay, we don't know how long Zvulun died lived. We don't know how well they lived either. This really put things at a C, at a pinnacle. It was unbelievable. I found this. And then all of a sudden you start thinking, wait a minute, what happens? Where do you find this? So it turns out you bash the shell in on the top. Potseya, it's a hard shell. And underneath the hard part, you'll never believe what's there. It's a clear dye waiting in plastic wrap, Reynolds. It's just like enzyme surrounding this little patch of dye that has no function to the animal whatsoever, doesn't help the animal live. It's like, I don't know, like the appendix. It does absolutely nothing for the animal. However, in order to get it, you actually do have to kill the animal, kill the snail. They take it with a scalpel, they cut it off, and they get the dye. It's waiting there for dye. That's what it is. God created a little patch of dye in every animal, in the snail. You start to think about all these possibilities, and it sounds really good. Sounds like this is really it. We're now going to go skip to the testing method. Now, was it common or not? Was it something that was found a lot? Was it common? Was it not common? And now here we start to get to the attacks on the Murex troncos. Yeah. What? Yeah. That's when you cut, after you smash it with a hammer, that's the ptzia, then it's there underneath the shell. It's, you just cut it away. What?
Didn't you say that piece of top?
Oh, I'm sorry. And besides for being the exact color, it also, once it turned blue and you dye it to the right thing, if you dye it to cotton, it doesn't stick. If you dye it to wool, which is indeed what you're supposed to dye it to, it turns out it's so steadfast. Rav Tavger, who was one of the people very involved in its rediscovery, he did an experiment where he put it in bleach, a ball of wool in the dyed with the tchelet in bleach for 3 days. It disintegrated, but it never came out. The blue will not come out. It won't come out in the sun. It will not ever come out. That's pretty steadfast. Okay, here we go. The Gemara says, brings down a braisa tana rabbanan. The second source in on the page, was it common or not? Tana rabbanan. Chilazon ze gufo dome layam. The chilazon, its body is similar to the sea. That is a problem. Its body is not similar to the sea. So some people have said, actually, it's identical to the sea. How? It sits on the coral, and it has develops this camouflage where it looks exactly identical to the coral. And unless you know exactly what you're looking for, you will not find them. By the way, they don't move. They sit on the coral and just sit their whole life. However, there are some things that it likes eating, certain kinds of algae it likes. And if you bait a net right next to the corals, you know what's going to happen? They'll slowly move to the nets. Is it trapping or is it not trapping? It's not trapping a snail because, hey, you could just pick it up. It's just sitting right there. But how would they get them? They would trap them. Machlokas, Babli Yerushalmi. Fits very nicely. But the Gufo Domal Yam, I will tell you, I do think is a stretch. I'll be honest, it says its body is similar to the sea. It's a little bit of a stretch. Next, Ubriyasel Domaladag. Its creation is similar to a fish. Well, it doesn't look like a fish. Rashi says on that, that its tavnit, its makeup, looks like a fish. It's made up like a fish. Now, it could be there are some people, some Rishonim that explain Ubriyaso Domo Ladag means it's the way it comes into the world, that it comes by through into the world with eggs. The way fish are spawned by eggs, so too the creature. Now, the only problem is the specific chila zone is not spawned in any different way than any other chila zone. So maybe that's a problem. We'll see if that is a problem or not. V'ola echad l'shivim shanayit comes up once in every 70 years. So that sounds like it's very uncommon. Does everyone agree to that? That if it comes up once in every 70 years, it's uncommon, yeah? It's impossible that it's uncommon. Absolutely uncommon. Because if you take a look at the... Okay, I don't have a fuller medrash here. That's not so good. Not very good. Megillah, if you look at the source right before it, it's not the fuller Gemara. If you want to look at it, look it up. I encourage you to look it up. Look at Rashi there. Husfunei tmunaychol is the bracha that Shevet Zvulun got, that their industry and parnasa will be from Zohi Tcheles. These are your hidden treasures. Rabotai, this was their parnasa. Millions and millions of them had to be found and readily available if it's going to be the parnasa for an entire Shevet. It makes it sound from the Gemara that it's a whole, the source, the nourishment for an economy. It's not going to be that it comes up and it's uncommon. What does it mean? Very possible that it's hard to find. It's very, very hard to find.
How many
new
snails reproduce? How many
come? No idea. We could look it up on the internet, I'm sure, but I have no idea.
Did they come up today? I mean, we've only had a special state here for
60
years.
I'll get to that. Ubidamo, and with its blood, sovin tchelet. You dye the tchelet. Lefikach damav yikarim. Therefore, its value or its blood yikarim. What's the therefore? Because of what? What? Because it's used for tchelet. It could be.
It has very little blood.
It could be, because it has very little blood. The lechila zon, it's used for tchelet, and you need a lot of them in order to make tchelet. So therefore, it's going to be very expensive. Okay? It's not probably because it comes up once in 70 years. It doesn't seem to be modifying that phrase. It seems to be modifying, as Amir pointed out, the phrase after. These things are a problem. And I started looking on the internet, not knowing what to do with this information. This price doesn't seem to fit as nicely. Turns out I found a guy named Dr. Saul Kaplan. There are five snails from which one could make a dye. From two of them, it's a very poor dye, brown, and not good quality. From three of them, you can make a good one. One of them is called the Janthana. The Janthana snail is either white or a bluish purple. It's the coolest thing. It floats. The way it floats is it shoots bubbles out its foot, and they harden, and it has a raft, and it floats under the raft. It can't swim and move, but it has this raft, and it just floats in deep sea. And what does it eat? It eats Portuguese men of war. When it bumps into them, it hooks on to its bottom. The tentacles can't get to it, and it sucks out all its guts. It's great. And then you end up with washed up Portuguese men of war along with Janthana snails. Charles T. Simpson, something like that. I don't remember the name. He found in the late 1800s off the Keys of Florida a mass stranding of Janthana snails. When I say a mass stranding of them, I mean mass. 3/4 of a mile wide. They're small. They're like this big. Purple. And miles long. He found millions and millions of Janthana snails. Talk about Ola Echad B'Shivim Shana. It is Ola. It's impossible to get the snail because otherwise. Unless it has a mass stranding, it's impossible to get it. Why? No. Because one will be here, one will be there. To get enough for Tcheles, is impossible. You can't hunt them. They're all over the sea, all over, but they're so tiny. They can barely get them. If they go deep sea sailing to hunt them, they'll get one here, one there. They're not going to get nearly enough. So Rav Herzog decided in his doctoral thesis, it's impossible, it's the Jantana, because you can't get these things. Maybe the Ola Efa, B'Shivim Shana. Gufo Domeladak. Its body, I'm sorry, Domeliyam is similar to the sea. It actually looks pretty good. It looks like the sea. Domel a dog, it's like a fish. So Dr. Kaplan said, the raft that it makes like itself, it's like a silvery bubble, it looks like fish. So maybe the Jantana is it. And he discovered a way to add chemicals. If you add chemicals, the Murex Trunculus, you don't really have to add anything. The chemicals that we're going to add are just the chemicals needed to get it from the chemical onto the wool. They're dyeing chemicals, not additional chemicals, if that makes any sense. But they don't add anything to the dye itself. Dr. Kaplan says, based on the Rambam doesn't really have this, based on the Rambam, he knows for sure that this is the recipe, he's got it, he won't tell anyone in the world. I asked him how I get online, so he says there's a 2,000 people waiting list, it's a 5-year waiting list, and it costs $2,000 for a pair. I was like, forget it. He points out attack after attack against the Murex Trunculus. And indeed, this was the information that I used almost to throw out the whole thing. I've been wearing these since 95. Not this pair, Baruch Shem. And in 93 is when Ptil Tchelet turned Murex Trunculus into a whole company, selling it at profit. They sell it at profit. All three individuals, Ari Greenspan, Joel Guberman, who did the Shlita with us, and Baruch Sturman, all have other professions, and they do it just L'Shem Mitzvah. Turns out that I was ready to throw it away. Maybe Rav Eliashiv is right after all said and done. Give the Radziner Rebbe's Tchelis 100 years, you'll disprove it. Give the Murex Trunculus just 10 years, you'll disprove it. That sounds even better. As a matter of fact, they haven't had enough Jantana to test it, but it would seem as if the second you kill it, and how do you kill it? You take the way you get the most dye out is by pressing it. It's a very thin shell, unlike the Murex, where you need a hammer to be potzea, and the potzea is done with your fingers, and that scares it. And when it scares it, it shoots out the dye, and the most dye when you scare it alive. And you have 5 seconds. They haven't had enough of a control experiment to do this with, but it seems as if you have 5 seconds to make a dye with it. The Gemara in Shabbos says, we prefer the chilazon stay alive. If you kill it on Shabbos, getting the dye out, you may not be obligated, you may not be chayav in killing the animal on Shabbos, because it's actually a davar shalo nichale. It's a psik reisha shalo nichale. You don't want it to happen. You don't want it to die. Why is that you don't want it to die? Because its blood is clearer if it's alive. What does that mean? If you find the Jantana dead, forget it. You don't have any dye. You need it alive. Turns out with the Murex Trunculus, you have 2 hours. So people in Ptil Tchelet said, it doesn't say anywhere in the Gemara how long. It doesn't say it's imminent, but the Jantana does fit really nicely. And the whole idea of pitzia, of banging, is dush. That's unbelievable, because when you squish it, crack it, that's the pitzia. Pitzia is cracking it. It actually squirts out the liquid. This is mamish unbelievable. If it's the Jantana, it really sounds very good. There's a few problems. The major problem is there's not a single historical record of using Jantana seriously for dyes. How could it be? A major industry is basically unknown that it ever was used.
You said it was really difficult to get.
Yeah, so that means that we're like only a couple of people, a handful of people for a mitzvah of Tchelas, and there were only throughout history a handful of people that wore Jantana colored dyes to the extent that no one really knows about it. It's really hard to believe.
Right now we're using the Murex Trunculus, right?
Yeah.
So back then they used the same logic. They also were using the Murex Trunculus in mass production.
they use the Mura Trunculus in there. But he's claiming that it's the Jantana. Dr. Kaplan from Rehovot claims it's the Jantana and not the Mura Trunculus.
I'm saying if it's hard to come by, so if you have to mass produce it, it's really that hard to come by, you use the Mura Trunculus anyway.
You'd use the wrong one?
No. If it's Machlokas, the same way that we use
Mura. It wasn't a Machlokas in the time of the Tanaim.
Oh, the Tanaim.
We're talking about prices here. What did they use?
You said something about Florida and what happened in Florida exactly?
Off the keys of Florida, there was a mass stranding. There hasn't been a mass stranding of Jantana in Israel ever in history, but.
What happened with all those Jantanas?
What happened to them?
Can't you take them and.
They're not there anymore. That was in the late 1800s.
So I'm saying, so once every 7 years, that doesn't ever make sense. So.
It hasn't happened since. Meaning that someone found. He was an excavationer, he found it, he stumbled across it, wrote about it, and that was the end of it. He wasn't Jewish. Right? He was just an excavationer, found it, and recorded it, and I found it online. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if even Dr. Kaplan, who claims the Jantana is it, I don't know if he knows this information about this excavation. I found it. Listen very carefully, Rabosai. I found the Teferis Yisrael. Teferis Yisrael, one of the commentaries on Mishnayos, and the Mishnayos called Yachanu Boaz. We have it in the Yeshiva, in Maseches Shabbos, in the Malach of Tzad, of trapping. He talks about the Tcheles, he goes through the whole piece. If you ever rediscover it, what would be an inhibiting factor to know if it is it or isn't it? What would be the criteria? And he says the word chilazon is a species of animal. And it's probably the snail, he says. And it could be any chilazon, any of the chilzonot, as long as you get the right color. By the way, a problem with the jantana is you could tell it apart chemically and visually. It doesn't look like indigo. That's a problem. I called Dr. Kaplan and I asked him, what are you going to do with that piece of information? You don't really fit into the Gemara as well as Mura Trunculus. And I came up with the answer that Daniel Hefter came up with about 1 minute ago. Per force, there are brisos that will say like this, and there are brisos that say like this. Why? If they had the jantana, if there was a nace, that it was ola echad b'shevim shana, you know what they used? They'll use the jantana. And in the event that they can't get the jantana, any chilazon is good. As a matter of fact, in the Rambam, if you're medayik in the words of the Rambam, he actually speaks about the dye, how it's steadfast and it's this color. He almost in no place cares about if it comes from a chilazon. Except in one place, by the way, it's almost like a by the way, it should be from a chilazon. That's the way the Rambam writes it. Because it doesn't matter if it's from this one or from this one, it has to be from a sea creature that's called a snail. Any of them will do. If that's the case, perhaps, and this is a big capital P perhaps, that even though the sepia, the Radziner Rebbe's squid, was disproven, and really what he rediscovered was something called Prussian blue, discovered in the 1700s, he just rediscovered it, which is impressive in its own right, but it wasn't Tchelet. It actually, if you think the word chilazon just means mollusk family, and you create the dye with some of the ink or blood from the squid, which is from the mollusk family, guess what? It's probably kosher for tefillah also. Now that's a little bit far-fetched, because the squid doesn't fit most of the sources. While the Mura Trunculus and the jantana fit. Does it fit more this way? Does it fit more this way? I think you could fetch the Murex Trunculus into everything, and it fits beautifully into many of the sources. And there's clear proof that it was used. Clear. Why is it that people don't wear it? The biggest attack, the strongest, harshest attack against it is from the Beis HaLevi. The Beis HaLevi was Rav Soloveitchik's great-grandfather. And he said some concept along the following lines against the Radziner Rebbe. There was a conversation between them. Would you accept Chelet? And he wrote that, what do you know that my grandfather didn't know? My grandfather didn't... snails were around. So what have you discovered? Squids were around. Nothing new has been created in the world. So what fell into the planet now that all of a sudden you know something that my grandfather didn't know? And if the Misora wasn't here, so you can't rediscover Misora. You can't wake up one morning with Misora when you didn't have Misora. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein holds of this. Rav Soloveitchik said this applies even Bizman Hazeh. Rav Soloveitchik was no longer... capable when this was really brought to light, which was in 1993. They couldn't exactly go to Rav Soloveitchik in 93. He had Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. He had a lot of degeneration, and he was not with it at all for about 10 years, and he passed away in 95. You couldn't ask him what he would say with the newest research, but he was asked when he was good and strong, and he held firmly that the Beis HaLevi means that if there's no Misora, if your father didn't tell you what it is, then you cannot recreate it into Halacha. Rabbosai, let me just tell you what that means. Rav Schechter does not understand it at all. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein today still holds on to this, and a number of Rabbanim still hold on to this idea that Rav Soloveitchik's explanation of the Beis HaLevi. And I will give you a different understanding of the Beis HaLevi, what the Beis HaLevi meant. If you read actually what the Beis HaLevi wrote, I don't think that's what he meant. And I have a copy of what the Beis HaLevi wrote. But if you understand this, Rabbosai, then understand this is what it means. It means that if you were to uncover a pit near the beach, and it turns out you find the Kohen Gadol's Begadim, and it says on it with a book, this was Aaron, these were Aaron HaKohen's clothing that he wore in the Beis HaMikdash. And the blue dye that's dyed on this these clothes are from the Murex trunculus snail. And this is how you make it. And this is Tchelet. You're not going to believe this, but if you take the Misora approach all the way, it means that it still would not be accepted in Halacha and you still can't wear it.
You can't wear it.
You're not allowed. You shouldn't. You shouldn't wear it. Why should you not wear it? Because you're recreating a halacha. It's impossible to recreate a halacha without Misora. If your father lost it, your grandfather lost it, you can't recreate it into the mechanism of halacha. How does that make sense? I'm not really sure. Rav Schechter doesn't understand how philosophically it makes sense at all. But that is the degree, the extreme degree to which they would say. And anyone that just throws around this idea of Misora, you should challenge them. Do you mean to tell me that if we would have beyond shadow of a doubt proof that this was it, so which we basically do, that it'd be beyond the shadow of a doubt that they definitely used this to produce indigo, then that means you still wouldn't wear it. If there was a book from the time of the Tanoim, this is it. This is how you make it. That means you still wouldn't wear it because we lost it. Once you lost it, you can't bring it back in. That's what Rav Soloveitchik held. Why does that make sense? I don't know. Yeah.
I don't see how that is just as confusing as you say. Twofold. First of all, I don't mean to sound argumentative.
Please.
But first of all, it's a lot of things in the Jewish, like in general Jewish customs, which appear not, even if something like, if you have two people who argue, and one person's right and one person's wrong, the majority hold by that one person, and if the sakis goes by that one person, even if he's wrong, it would still be, like if we go up and we find out that our calendar system is wrong, it doesn't matter because, you know, Hashem gave us, that's one of the things that Hashem gave us, he gave us the power to create the system for ourselves.
If so, you find out something was wrong,
if we find out we made
so then you don't just say, okay, it's wrong.
No. I mean, like the story with when the Nasi made Yom Kippur and I remember the other rabbi.
Time is given to us. HaKodesh is Elohim.
Right.
We are given the power to make time whenever we want. Chazal, even Beis Din, is allowed to make an extra month.
Right, exactly.
It doesn't fit into the seasons. And they want to put in another month, they can put in another month. Because time was given to us to create.
Exactly. So there are a lot of things.
If Tchelis exists or it doesn't exist, that's it. We know what it is. We found it. No. Because it disappeared from your father. Yeah.
I'm saying a lot of things like if you find something in the Gemara and it seems to clearly go according to The Gemara seems to clearly show it's one thing. A lot of times we'll find the Gemara will say it'll be something totally different. This is more well versed, so I can, you know, back yourself.
Yeah.
By the way, he's saying that we have a story in the Gemara where we're at the end of Gibbon and Moshe Shemayim, the whole story where arguing about a certain oven and the fight and everything. That's a perfect example of what he's saying. He's saying, Bakul comes down and saying he's right, and then we're saying, doesn't matter, Moshe Shemayim, we're the majority, we say that we don't agree with him, even though he's right, and therefore we're the
right. Right, so if a Bakul would come down from heaven and say, this is Tchelet, we wouldn't listen to the Bakul, I'm with you. But right. If mankind says, we've rediscovered it, then why wouldn't you go with it?
Because it could be 100 years later we find out that it was...
Oh, so that means you're not sure what it is. The Masorah approach is not that you're not sure what it is. The Masorah approach, if you take it literally, the way Rav Soloveitchik understands it, it means that you cannot bring it back into halacha once it's gone from halacha. Period. No matter what you find, you could find the best proof in the world. Proof beyond reasonable doubt, beyond the shadow of that, 100% proof. Still, there's nothing you could do.
I'm saying, like, we're never gonna find proof beyond. I mean, true. The example that you gave with the book that says this is the chelas from the time, that would be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. But thinking, like, logically thinking, we're never gonna.
That's a separate question. Your question is, you're understanding this Masorah idea as. Since the Masorah is gone, that means I can't know if this is really it or not. But that's not what his point was.
Maybe that's the logic behind his point. Maybe he's saying that you can't. What's the reason that you can't? If we would find something that would seem to show one way, so if we find a chelet, and it's, there are all these sources that are backing it up and saying, and look, I have the proof for this. Here's the proof. He's saying that the logic behind it is. Nowadays we're not really that able to prove something that well.
I don't know. The fact that it's exactly identical in the chemical compound and the fact that it's known throughout history that the Jews made dyes in this color from the Murex trunculus, that's pretty good.
5 years from now, though, we can find another snail that.
There's no other snail known. In world history, you go through all the books. They've gone through it already. They went through all the ancient dyes. There's no other snail in world history known that the Jews made a bluish-purple dye from. No other creature, no other plant, no other nothing. Yeah.
Why hasn't Tchelet caught on water?
Okay, so the Radina Rebbe was very upset when he came up with his discovery that people are not willing to do things that are change. Some things people are willing to do, some things people are not willing to do. I don't have time to go through everything. There are people that throw around the Isurim. There's an Isser called the Din Kanaf. You're not allowed to wear it. I explained this morning to a few people why it's not true. The Ramah, first of all, doesn't hold of the Din Kanaf. That's the Ashkenazim. And even the Sephardim, it's not true. The Din Kanaf never applied to the world of Tchelet. It only applies to the white strings, which means that essentially that you should wear white strings if you're Ashkenazi, and if you're Sephardi, you should wear whatever color the garment is. So if you have a green army baguette, you should wear green strings. If you have a red garment, you should wear red strings. But if you're Sephardic, if you're Ashkenazic, you should wear white ones. So people say, you see, you're supposed to wear white. The Ashkenazim holy is supposed to wear white whenever you can. That never applied. It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. The Torah says, wear tchelet. You're supposed to wear tchelet. This nice other din, which the Ramah doesn't even hold of, so that's why, I'm sorry, the din of kanaf, which the Ramah does not hold of, does not demand that you overturn the halacha of tchelet. Yes? It's part of the mitzvah tzitzis. But whenever you have a mitzvah, the way mitzvah works versus a matir. Matir is something that you have to do in order to permit X. In order to eat meat, you have to shech the animal. It permits you. But if you want to eat bread, you have to wash your hands. It permits you to eat the bread, etc. A woman that wants to marry someone after being married to a guy that died and had a brother, a living brother, she has to do chalitza. It permits her to marry out. Whenever you have a matir, you have to do every aspect of the matir, A to Z. If you miss one part, then you lost everything. By a mitzvah, whatever you could do, you do. Tefillin, according to the bottom line, it's a machlokas. If it's one mitzvah or two mitzvahs, even if you hold it's one mitzvah and you only have one of them, one tefillah, not the other, you still do it. You don't do, you still get a mitzvah because we get parts of this.
So
Yeah, is there anything wrong, by the way, wearing red or green? Other than the nicety, there's a pasuk in Mishlei that the Kisei HaKavod is white, that the Bach quotes. Before the Bach, this was never a drasha, the Bach brings it down, that this is a nice thing, the Mishnah Berurah brings it down as well, it's a nice thing, you should wear white when you can. That, again, the Ramah brings it down, this idea you should wear white, and the Mishnah Berurah explains that's from the Bach, because it's this nice idea to be a zecher for the Kisei HaKavod, which is white. If that's true, so do you get something wrong? Are you doing a prohibition if you're wearing red or green or something? You're not getting a prohibition. There's nothing you're doing wrong other than you're not doing something that nice that you could be doing. However, when it comes to a very strong potential fulfilling a mitzvah d'oraisa, according to all Rabbanim, there's nothing you could be getting an isser for. You can't be doing a prohibition. The thing you could be doing wrong is you're recreating halacha when the Masara was gone, if you hold on to that idea, and etc. But you're not, or you're changing things when other Gedolim don't. But I could give you a list. You go to the Petil Tefelet website, you want to see the Gedolim that do. Rav Zalman Nechemya Goldberg wears Tefelet, and he, Rav Aviner, Rav Ariel, Rav Schefter, Rav, it seems, we ask Rav Scheinberg, Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg. One of the Gedolei Yisrael, he wears like 100 pairs of tzitzis. He came to be sandik at a bris. Ravito's grandfather, Ravito's father, is first cousin with Rav Scheinberg. And so he was here, he was the sandik at his son's bris, and we asked his son, "No, let us know, does your father wear it or not?" And he didn't say yes, but it was pretty clear that the answer was yes. Yes.
So you said that this is part of the mitzvah of tefillos. So if you don't wear tefillos, then like you get we have the mitzvah of tefillos is on the four corner garment. So if you're wearing tefillos without tefillos, wouldn't that be like wouldn't you be already missing for the four?
I'm sorry.
You said that tefillos is part of the mitzvah of wearing tefillos. So for now for people wearing
it's a pitul aser. You're missing an aser, like not putting on tefillin, like not saying Kriya Shema.
Aren't you over the aser though? Because you're also in the
fourth corner garment. No, tefillin is a mitzvah to put it on. To put it on the Arba Kanfos. It's a pitul aser. Okay. Well, he died saying that the Murex Strenculus is the most likely, but he can't figure out how it works because it's purple and it's not steadfast. He concluded he doesn't know. He wrote a whole book on it, and he concluded he doesn't know. It's the most likely candidate. He said Jantana is impossible because it's in deep sea and you can't get it. So I'm pointing out that it's very possible because if there's a mass stranding, now I don't know how likely that is, but it fits into the lashon of Ola Echad L'Shivim Shana very beautifully. Maybe a Kadosh Baruch Hu was misabe that it would be Ola and as a mass stranding. And it wouldn't suggest such a thing had it never happened. But we saw there was a case of the Keys of Florida that it did.
How would one determine what type of tie to use?
Okay, so the type of tie is going to have to be separate. There's just very, very quickly. No, again, if we just do a quick chazara, no one holds it's an isser to wear it. There was someone I was with, I was in Baltimore in the summer, and I was asking someone a question, schmoozing with someone who invented a new type of tying method. I was like, how do you do that? You know, the Rishonim will have this way, and he came up with a whole new one. And this guy was asking me, how am I going to tie him, his pshat? I was like, I don't know what his pshat is. So I finally met the guy behind this new pshat. And I was schmoozing with him about tying. And of course, this guy next to us hears the conversation about this, and he starts attacking the rabbi. Who do you think you are? You could wear tefillos. It doesn't make sense. The Gdolin don't wear. So he said, let me ask something. If you research something, and you learn something, and you learn it from mi'alef ad tof, and you go through it, and you know what you're supposed to do, did you ask the Gdolin? You shouldn't do it because this one doesn't do it. If you know 100% what you're supposed to do, do it. If you're not sure, and you're not being humble enough, and you're not really sure, and you're just guessing, maybe I don't really know what I'm talking about, or I'm just going to assume I know everything, even though I don't, that's where you end up with a big problem. But it's very, very hard to find someone that's going to say it's usher, and it's hard to find someone that's going to say that you're doing something wrong. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. That's what it would seem. Yeah. So change is a very difficult thing. Change is a very, very difficult thing. It's a very dangerous thing. Rabbi Willie, who I respect tremendously, had a very good svara. He said, as a community rav, I can't allow change. I'm telling you, mass change on a community level is usually a risky thing. Okay? He has a community to worry about, a very large community. And, okay, I'm not in that position. And I don't have to worry about those ramifications. But I will tell you something that is important. There was a Talmud of mine. People don't like, I think I said this story once, people do not like being uncomfortable. And if you're going to go out of here with blue tzitzis and be uncomfortable with them because you're one of millions and most people aren't wearing them, and you're going to be uncomfortable because in the end you're not going to wear tzitzis, well then, Rabosai, the priorities are off. Don't put on blue and then end up with the fatality of not putting on tzitzis. This is a good thing. It's a nice thing. That's what it would seem to me. There are attacks. Maybe it's the Jantana. Maybe it's only the Jantana. The Teferi Shirl says it could be all types of Chilazon. Maybe the Teferi Shirl, maybe it's not right. Maybe it's not true. Okay, there are maybes. I'm willing to grant all that. But if you say, I'm going to do what I really think, it makes so much sense. So I have everything to gain, nothing to lose. I'm going to do it. There's a Talmud from Leva Torah that doesn't wear tzitzis now at all. So I doubt it was because he was wearing Chilazon. But Rabosa, there was a boy also that went to a yeshivish place. After he left Leva Torah, he went to a yeshiva in New York. And he asked me my opinion. Should I keep my tchelas? I said, no. I told him, no, you shouldn't. Because everyone there wears it out and wears white out, only white. And you're going to be the odd man out. So either you've got tremendous, tremendous shoulders, and you won't feel uncomfortable, you're okay with being the odd man out, or you're going to end up going crazy, you're not going to fit, you're going to have a problem, you'll leave the yeshiva. So that's worth it. You're going to end up leaving because you weren't feeling comfortable in yeshiva, so you're not going to learn because you wanted to wear your blue tzitzit. That doesn't make sense to me.
Talking about being uncomfortable with the tennis, maybe the girls are not wearing tzitzit at all. She's also wanting to go from the tennis and maybe you're not comfortable, so you go back to this white. Is that a problem?
Yeah, if you think this is beyond a shadow of doubt, this is absolutely it. This is so it that it's mamish, you have to do it. Then you'd have a problem not doing it. But I don't know if anyone is willing to say that, right? Because if you really think that, then your tzitzis should also be shatnas. Right? The real, real tzitzis is linen beged and wool strings. No one's willing to go there, right? However adamant someone might be, this is it. No one's gonna risk that, right? So as long as there's a possibility that, you know, I'm doing it because I have everything to gain and nothing to lose, that's why I'm doing it, if you change your mind, A lot of people have the scare. If you do this, you're never going to be able to stop, so don't start. Right? I'm doing it because it's a mitzvah. It's a good thing. It seems to be a mitzvah. If you start wearing tefillin, if you start keeping Shabbos, you're never going to be able to stop keeping Shabbos. Like, what kind of idea is that? Yeah, you should say B'li Neder. Yeah.
I understand this. So you're saying it's a mitzvah, so a rice that you can do those. But if you're going to be embarrassed, you shouldn't do it. So if the mitzvah is a rice.
No. Meaning as well. Again, we're not 100% sure. At least I'm not 100% sure. After I saw the Jantana research, I said to myself, you know what, maybe it's the Jantana. Now, the fact that there's no historical evidence of Jantana, and the fact that the chemistry is way off with the Jantana, means that it probably isn't. But you know what? The Jantana fit into that one Brysa very nicely. And maybe the Murex, maybe it isn't it. Maybe one of the other Murex things, they'll figure out another way to do it. Okay, it won't fit so well into the historical evidence. But you never know. Do I believe that strongly? This is a strong possibility? Yeah. This is definitely a really strong possibility. It makes the most sense. But to say it's 100% vadayit, to say it's an obligation, it's a chiyuv d'oraisa to wear it because this is definitely it, I think that's really pushing it. So I can't say it's a chi of Doraisa. I think it's a potential to be Mekayim of Doraisa. What? Yeah, but once there are a number of Gedolim, the Yura is deciding only who's a Gedolim and who's not a Gedolim. Yeah. Today it's, I actually, but